What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Guest Friday on Not Your Average Boston Sports Podcast. Not your average Boston Sports Podcast. We got Evan Marinovsky back on the program. We're talking some Bruins, talking some puck. And Evan, it's great to have you back. Great to talk Bruins.
Thanks, Garrett. Thanks for having me. It's been a while, so it's nice to be back. Maybe not the best timing
Yeah.
given where the team is at, but I'm happy to be here.
That's very true. Yeah. So I think timing of this, we'll be talking some Bruins. We'll be talking a little Four Nations face-off as well as that kicks off next week. I think it's next Wednesday we're recording this Thursday, and the Bruins are one game left before the 2 week break for the Four Nations face-off. So we'll get to that later in the program. But first, as we're here talking about the Bruins, obviously more than halfway through the season, we're at the point where they played 56 games. And it's just kind of been a strange season for the Bruins. It seems like they've struggled to find their consistency, find their footing. You obviously have done the Bruins podcast for a couple of years, so you're pretty, well versed on this team. I'm curious about your thoughts about where the team is at the moment.
They're just so inconsistent. And it's tough because they show little flashes. I don't even know if it's that much, but you see, you saw the game against Minnesota Tuesday where, they win 3-0. They play good defense. They play the right way. They outplayed Minnesota. It's the first team they've outplayed in a long time. They had a nice win over the weekend against the Rangers. And then they lead late, but they drop one against New York last night on Wednesday. And then on top of it, this three game stretch is after they got blown out by Buffalo and Winnipeg. So it's like they're just inconsistent. And I think we know what they are at this point. And I know like some of Sweeney's comments on the broadcast on Wednesday night, I think he's still holding out some hope. I don't know where the hope is coming from because we know what they are. They have these, big losses. Yeah, they can occasionally beat a Colorado or a, Florida or a good team or a Tampa. But they don't ever outplay the other team, it feels like. Every team feels more skilled. Every team seems faster. And I think when you look at how it started, how the season started, Swayman's stuff, and then Swayman's underperforming the first couple months, the coach firing, Elias Lindholm's had a really tough first year here. There's a lot of other roster guys who are underperforming as well. It just isn't their year. It doesn't feel like that. And I'd love to be wrong. I'd love for them to get hot and go into the playoffs and win a couple rounds. That'd be fun for all of us, but I just don't see it happening at this point.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the consistency is kind of the number one thing for me as well, because it's like, you keep thinking that, okay, this is going to be the game where they, get it together, they win a couple games and get back on track, and hasn't really happened. I kind of thought it was going to happen last week, and then they go up to Buffalo and get smoked, and then they play Winnipeg, what was it, 2 nights later, and lose by a lot, in a game where they get a shorthanded goal to tie the game, start of the third period, and you're like, okay, awesome, here we go. And then it kind of just falls back to what you kind of expect. And so, again, big win against the Rangers on Saturday, and then you followed up with a good performance against Minnesota, but then the Rangers, you have a third period lead again, and you can't hang on to it, shorthanded goal. And it just seemed like, yeah, everything went sideways in the third period in that game Wednesday. So just not a lot of consistency, as you said. I'm curious if there's one or two things that's like surprised you the most about this year's team that can either be positive or negative, maybe something you've noticed.
I'll do one of each. I'm surprised at Elias Lindholm. I was prepared, and I said this a couple times after they signed him that, year three or four or five of that deal, maybe he's not a top line center. Maybe he's your second line guy. And that's okay. 8 million or around 8 million for someone like that with the cap at that point, you'll be fine with. For him in year one to be really dried up offensively, the 5-on-5 point production hasn't been there at all. Did score a shorthanded goal the other night, has been okay on the power play of late, but still not where you need him to be. I expected him to be, go-to guy in the bumper on the power play. And he's still been good on draws and stuff like that. But, I expected him to work with Pasternak and to have 65, 70 points and, to be a fit. And I think when you look at where this team is underperformed and the shortcomings of them, it all kind of stems from him. I'm not saying it's all his fault, but him not fitting in as the number one center with Pasternak kind of threw everything out of whack. Suddenly Zaka's back up on the top line, Geeky's back up on the top line, and that line works, but you went out and got Lindholm, so Geeky didn't have to be on the top line. And Coyle's now on the wing, and everybody moves in different areas now because he didn't fit as the number one center. And that's a disappointment. So that's one surprise. I'll try to pick a positive surprise. It I guess not so much the team, but the Atlantic is really mid. Like everybody's in the same boat. I mean, Tampa, Detroit, Ottawa, they're all in the same ballpark. And I didn't expect that. I thought, give or take, like one of those teams would emerge. Tampa can't beat their own division, but they're fine against everybody else. So it's a surprise. I mean, every time the Bruins lose, the other Atlantic teams lose. Every time they win, the other Atlantic teams win. So I think it's the positive surprise for the Bruins is they're still in the mix when they really shouldn't be. They shouldn't be in the mix the way they've been playing. Their goal differential is awful. And I guess on top of that, another positive development is they're still in the mix despite all that. So it's not a roster-based thing, because I mean, Pastrnak has picked up where he left off last year, being an elite playmaker along with an elite goal scorer. He's been much better the last 2 months, but that's not a surprise. You pay him for that. So I would say those are my little two surprises.
I think, clearly the two of us have talked about we're kind of not super high on the team right now. Would you say that you're pretty pessimistic about the team's playoff chances just based on where they are at the moment?
Yeah, I would say I am. I mean, it wouldn't shock me though if they even dealt Frederick at the deadline and still got in. Like, it wouldn't shock me if they found their way in. It's very them. And I think, even when you think back to the offseason, they built this team to try to be better in the playoffs, maybe a little bit not a, a little bit worse in the regular season. And they've been much worse in the regular season, but there's always that part of me, like the angel on the other shoulder, that's like, well, what if they did sneak in? And what if they got Washington in the first round and they upset them? What if they did that? And it's like, oh, maybe. But I always go off of Garrett, like what we've seen, what I've seen so far from this team. Why would I believe in this team based off what we've seen, right? Like, it's a cool idea that they get in. It's fun. It's nice. We all, it helps us all if they get in the playoffs. But do we have faith based off what we've seen? I have a tough time saying yes to that.
Yeah, no, I would definitely agree. Like, I don't think there's anything that really definitively tells you that, like, yes, they're a playoff team. But like you said, like, they could get in. It's entirely possible that they go on like a late season run where they win, six or seven in a row just as easily as they lost six in a row earlier this season. But yeah, I think I'm with you. I'm not super, optimistic, but certainly there's always a chance. And I think with, like you said, the division not being as good as like you would expect, like they still have a shot at this.
And Swayman got hot last year. So like, what if he gets hot again? What if these guys find their stride at the end of the year? It goes back to, I don't know if they will. I haven't seen anything through the regular season that would make me think that they snap out of it. And Lindholm, Elias Lindholm's hot again, and Hampus Lindholm comes back off of, missing 45 games and suddenly is right back to where he was before. But let's say that does happen. All right, then like maybe there's a chance. But I can't sit here and safely say that of what I've seen.
So obviously we're, getting close to the break for the Four Nations, and then after that it's, a week or two before the trade deadline. Where they stand right now, what do you think the direction should be? Do you think it's a clear like they should sell, or they should try to make a run, or maybe do something that tells you that maybe they try to do a little bit of both?
I think if there was like a chart and it was like, sell is one side and buy is another, they're in the middle, but more towards sell. So it's sort of like a retool. I don't foresee them dealing off guys like Coyle, Marchand, Carlo. It's not like them. I think it's, selling it all with this team is like pulling teeth given the success they've had over the last decade. So I don't see that happening. I see them making smaller deals. I see like a Frederick. Do they deal a Brazo? Like, my litmus test is, can you get back in the second round? Can you get in the second round of June's draft so you can have a first, a second, and a third? Because everybody knows those are the most important picks that, the top 90-ish prospects in the draft who were picked are the higher end ones. At 4 through 7, statistically, I mean, it's a crapshoot. A seventh round pick has pretty much just as good a chance of panning out as a fourth round pick. It's so to me, I want to get back in the second. I'd love to get an extra third, or, could you get 2 seconds? Could you even get in the first? Like, and I also, but I think even with those things, I listen on Geeky, even though I do kind of want to re-sign him. I listen on Carlo and Coyle, and I listen on Marchand, and I just see what is the market? What do you, if you get a haul for Morgan Geeky, how do you turn that down? How do you turn down a first round pick and potentially more for Morgan Geeky? He fits anywhere in a lineup. Like, and my whole thing is like, he works with Pastrnak. You don't have much depth on the wings. He works here. I'm fine with re-signing him as long as the price is right. But again, as I said, if someone came along and said, here's a first and a mid-level prospect, how do you say no to that? How do you turn that down? So I listen, but I think they go a little smaller, Frederick Brazeau, and I think they still compete. Like, I think you can deal those two guys, Frederick and Brazeau, and you can still, you're in it. Like, Merculov comes up for Frederick. I think that's a you probably get more production. And does Lysell come up for Brazeau? Do they go with more of a veteran look? Because, that would be Patra and Merculov in the lineup at the same time. Do they really want another rookie? I don't know. But I think they still are in the mix. Now, do they make the playoffs? I don't know. And is that the perfect thing for their future? I don't know that about that either. Because I do think it's clear this team is low on good depth players. And it's clear this team does need to get some draft capital back and needs to be kind of replenishing the prospect pool, which they have not done in recent years because they've been good. That's the other thing. People are always like, oh, they never make their picks. And it's like, well, because they dealt one for Hampus Lindholm. Like, they deal it to contend, which, like, I'm okay with Sweeney putting every chip in the middle of the table for that 22-23 season. That team was a wagon. That's not on Sweeney. That's on the team. So to me, I think they go small. They go small with trades and try to continue to contend. They try to do best of both worlds. And I don't think that's the best possible move, but I think that's what they probably end up doing.
What do you think about a guy like Andrew Peak? I was thinking about that last night, and I was like, right-handed shot guy that's had a pretty good season. Like, feel like if they look to move him, they could possibly get a second round pick out of that, because I feel like a guy like that could fetch something if teams are desperate.
Completely agree. That's another one. Put him in the category with Brazeau and Frederick. Like, I think he's sort of like, if you're gonna trade Peak and like Carlo is a much better version of Peak. Although this season it's actually been the numbers show they've been fairly close. But I think, just overall their body of work, Carlo's has been much bigger and better than Peak's, and he's more of a leader and all those things. So I agree with you. I think Peak's in that same category. Like, if you could unload Peak for a second, I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that. Now, what do you do on the right side of your D? I think that's an off-season problem. You can go get a depth veteran right shot defenseman. Do you bring someone up from Providence? Do you go with two lefties, like a Wotherspoon and a Callahan on that third pairing or something? But I'm with you. I'd put Peak in that same category as well. I like that idea.
So obviously we talked a little bit about Elias Lindholm. I'm kind of curious to talk about him and Zadorov. Obviously, they're in the first year of those big deals. Do you think that there's anything to, like, and I've been thinking about this all year, the fact that the two of them have struggled at times and have shown flashes at times. Do you think maybe part of this is they're still having a hard time, like, adjusting to being on a different team in the first year of a deal? And do you think that maybe second year, third year, maybe they start to kind of get into a rhythm? I mean, that's kind of my hope for this, and maybe that's, just being too hopeful, but kind of curious what you think about that.
I don't think it's crazy. I mean, again, I think is, you know, when you're a free agent and you sign a long-term deal and your kids are adjusting to a new place and your wives and like I that's hard. Well, not wives for each of them. I mean, wives between them. I mean, they each have, you know, two or three wives. I mean, you know, wife per, but
Sure.
that it's hard. That's not easy. And I you know, I think you look at free agents and some immediately hit, but I mean, it's different obviously because he was a goalie. But like Linus Olmark in his first year was kind of up and down a bit. And it was like, oh, who is this, who we think it is? Like, is this really who you gave 5 million to? I think with them, like Lindholm, I do think has another gear. Like, I am very open and interested in what his year two will look like. Who is he with? I would assume. In the offseason, they're signing a free agent winger or two. Like a Brock Besser would make a lot of sense. I mean, we'll get to free agency like as the season winds down and as the offseason gets closer. But like, who is Lindholm playing with? Because again, you have him for 6 more years after this. Like, you do have to factor in like who's gonna work with him? You know, who are wingers that work alongside him? So that's the him. Zadorov, I worry about. I think Zadorov's, like, you know, if he is just a third pairing defenseman, fine. But his decision making worries me a little bit. His hockey IQ, I just find very low for an NHL player. He can be effective, right? Like, he's not horrible with the puck at times. Like, he does have pretty good hands for someone who's 6'5". I never buy into like, oh, he's big and tough and he can rough other teams up. I don't think of that ever. Like, I think a fast guy is going to find ways around him. And you've seen that. You've seen that. He gets tired in the defensive zone and kind of just stands there. So I don't know about him. Like, you know, I don't know if he's magically going to work with McAvoy next year or magically going to be a top pairing defenseman next year. Whereas I think Lindholm has that potential. I don't know if Zadorov does. So, and you're not getting out from either of these guys either. I don't see it. Like, you would have to get them to waive no moves. So you're stuck with them. And Zadorov's money isn't horrible. What's it, 6 million or 5 million? It's right. It's
Yes, I think it's
one of the
six.
two.
Yes.
It's six for 5 years. That's not horrible. But again, if it's a third pairing D, you basically got like a more expensive Derek Forbert. And that's not great.
That's not great.
And but I agree with you. I think there is a chance that both are better in year two. Zdeno Chara was not great his first year here. You know, like it happens. So maybe Zadorov does. He's full, you know, and I would assume there will be a new coach next year. And I would definitely assume there will be a new defensive coach. Maybe someone unlocks something in him. I don't know. But I don't think it's wrong to have a little optimism about those two guys in year two. No, I don't.
One of the other things that I'm very curious to get your opinion on is Bruins have obviously struggled mightily on special teams this year, you know, kind of been near the bottom in terms of penalty kill and power play. And I feel like that's strange to me that, you know, the power play has been pretty like bad all year. Penalty kill has been pretty low. I'm kind of like not sure why that's going on. Like penalty kill, usually the Bruins are near the top of the league in that area, and they've really struggled a lot this year. And the power play, just despite, I think, still a good level of talent, they're still struggling to, you know, score goals consistently. And it seems like it's been a huge part of why they've struggled this season. So, kind of curious why you think that that is this year.
Yeah, the penalty kill is weird because, you know, the personnel hasn't changed that much. I mean, DeBrusk used to kill penalties. Obviously, he's not there anymore. It does have a little bit to do with, you know, you don't have the goalie tandem anymore. So, you know, Swayman hasn't given you the same caliber season he has the past 2 years. Korpisalo hasn't been better than Ullmark. So, like, you have to factor in that. They're taking a lot more penalties this year. So, if you're killing penalties all the time and you're killing them more, that's taxing your PK guys. That's increasing the likelihood that the other team scores on a man advantage. Power play is wild. They've lost a lot off that power play in past years. I mean, Bergeron's a huge loss. Krug was a huge loss. Krejci's a huge loss. I think they, you know, the first half of the year, they became so complacent and so dependent on Pastrnak with the one-timer. And teams just shut it down. They would put a guy on Pastrnak, and you'd see David backing up towards the half wall to try to take a one-timer, and it's like, all right, well, that's such a low percentage shot. The goalie knows it's coming. Teams have pre-scouted you completely for that. And to me, they're much more effective when he's moving around and when he's not in the one-timer spot. Yes, that's his best asset, but he's also great in the bumper. He's great at the top as a facilitator. Because teams have to commit to him. You saw that against New York on Saturday on McAvoy's one-timer power play goal. The high forward comes up to is on Pastrnak, which allows that pass to get through to McAvoy because the lane is wide open and no one was covering McAvoy because you have to respect David Pastrnak. And so that's an asset. I use that as an asset and say, all right, have guys moving around. Pastrnak is one of the most underrated passers in hockey. We've seen that the last year and a half. He was phenomenal with it last year. I think he had over 60 assists. And this year, it's been more of the same the last couple of months. Just his deception. Teams have to be ready for him to shoot. So you see, defensemen coming towards him, which opens up another guy. And he's been great at that. Utilize that more. Like McAvoy can take a one-timer. Lindholm can take a one-timer. Marchand, Zaka, those guys can take one-timers on the other side. And I just think Pastrnak's more effective that way. So they're figuring that out. Obviously, it's really hard to change a power play mid-season. Guys are used to where they're used to. But that to me in movement. And the other thing is, I think that just shows you where they lack skill. No one's great at getting clean offensive zone entries every time, which is like the number one thing to get a good power play is like, can I just enter the offensive zone with a controlled entry? You see it like dump, they're dumping it in more, and then they're battling for pucks. And suddenly you've got three forwards below the goal line battling for a puck. And it's like, all right, well, they could get it, but if they don't, the other team's just clearing it and you're restarting and you never have time to really set up because that's killing time. So that they don't have enough skill and they were way too reliant on Pastrnak in the one-timer spot. Those were my two things with the power play.
It's interesting that you mentioned DeBrusk because I feel like people, I think people really forget about like how good he has been on special teams in his career with the Bruins, killing penalties and being a guy that's really good at retrieving pucks on the power play. It's just interesting that kind of didn't even occur to me that like that's kind of a huge loss. Not that it's like an excuse or anything, but it's just interesting that you mentioned him because I'm like, yeah, he's a pretty big part of their special teams. The last couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. And he grew really. They grew him into a guy who could hold his own defensively, who could go out and kill penalties and always had a high compete, always hunting pucks. And they've missed him. They have missed him this year. They never really replaced him. And I think that's one oversight we all kind of had where it was like, oh, they went out and they got a number one center and they got a potential top pairing defenseman. But depth-wise, they didn't do a heck of a lot this offseason. And I think you've really seen that hurt them. Over this whole season.
Recently, we've seen Matt Patra come back to the Bruins, be in the lineup regularly, and I think you've seen him play really well over the last, however long it's been since he's been called up. Do you think does his recent performance give you, hope for the future? What's kind of your thoughts on that?
Gives me hope. I just wonder, like, is he your top line center going forward? Probably not. I would assume he's more of a second line center who can fill in on that top line. I like his playmaking ability though. I like his puck work. I like his skill. I like his hands. And that kind of skill, that kind of setup ability, you don't see on this roster. Like outside of Pastrnak and Zaka, you don't see a lot of that. Like and the puck doesn't die on his stick, and he's great with pucks along the wall, and he's good in board battles, and I like what I've seen so far. Now his next step is, can you play 16 minutes a night in a bigger role or 17 minutes a night in a bigger role? He's still really young. He's still really, really young. So 12, 13 minutes a night is what you're gonna get out of him, and that's okay. And again, I know there's some hesitancy. Like, I've heard some hockey people who are like, oh, he's probably a third line center. I don't think that. I think he's a top six center. I definitely think he is a center, not a wing. So I think what I've seen of late, his setup abilities and what he's able to create offensively, I really like. And that's why, again, like, why is Mrkulov not up here? Same type of thing. Can set guys up, can make things happen offensively, a little bit of skill. This lineup is so devoid of skill and just, those kinds of things. And you have a lot of, grittier guys who can occasionally score a goal and make things happen, but you need some skill. And Patra provides that. Mrkulov should be able to provide that. I'm skeptical about Lysell, but can he provide that? So I've liked what I've seen from Patra. Not I want to tr I don't want to trade him unless it's for, a legit number one center. It's Elias Pettersson, that's different, which isn't going to happen now, obviously. But yeah, I've liked what I've seen out of him recently, which is good. Which you've w they've need, of all the negatives this year, that's a positive for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think moving over to the Four Nations face-off that kicks off next week are games in Montreal and then in Boston. I think when this was announced a couple of years ago or whatever it was, I think it was very exciting, because I think we get to see the best on best hockey. Curious about your thoughts about this tournament overall. Good for the NHL, good for international hockey.
I think it is good. I do. I like it. I am always kind of track, in New England with New England Hockey Journal, we're always, our main thing is, prospects coming up and bigger picture hockey things in New England. But it does give you a glimpse into the rest of the country. And, it's no secret that the United States has put out some incredible hockey players over the last 10 years. And you see that. I mean, when I was younger, those USA teams were gritty, hard-nosed guys like David Backes. And now you've got guys like, Jack Hughes and Austin Matthews, who would have seemed unthinkable. You have two of the most skilled guys in the league, and you've got more coming up. And I think that that is such a great development. And you even look like, obviously I'm rooting for the US, but like goaltending. All three of the US's goalies would be the starter for Canada by far. And can hockey in Canada is going down. I'm not saying it's like dying or anything, but the numbers are down. I was reading the Frank Saravalli piece back in November. So I think it's encouraging that the United States is as strong as they are. Like this isn't like, oh, it's an upset if the US beats Canada. Like obviously, yeah, Canada has McDavid and Makar and MacKinnon, and that's wonderful. But I think it's great for the US. I think it's great for hockey to see best on best. These guys want it. And then the question is, can they expand it? Can Czechia get a team? Can Russia get a team? I know that obviously the Ukrainian war with Russia obviously is sort of, I think, was a big reason why they didn't have a team in this go around. But can you make it bigger? I'm for that. My other thing, Garrett, I've been floating this idea recently with the Beanpot. I would love an NHL in-season tournament. Sort of like the bean pot, where you have 32 teams, so you could have four teams in each, and you spend a week of the season either doing all in season tournament that week, or you pick a week for each grouping. So over the course of 8 weeks, every grouping has their week, and you have them go off, you face off against each other, local rivalries. What if it was Boston, Montreal, Toronto, and the Rangers? Or maybe the next year you switch it up. And you do, New York, New Jersey, the two New York teams, New Jersey and the Bruins. You try different things, and it freshens this part of the year up. Like Four Nations is something new this time of year, which is nice. It's kind of a dog days part of the hockey calendar, part of the sports calendar, and the Beanpot provides that. Now you're not going to get the history, obviously, in these in these in-season tournaments, but it freshens it up. It strengthens rivalries. The Bruins are playing the Leafs two or three times in a week potentially, or the Ducks are playing the Sharks two or three times in a week. You're going to get rivalries out of that, so I love that idea. I know it's not Four Nations like you asked me, but it's been a kind of a Four Nations Beanpot inspired thing where I want to see teams consistently going up against each other.
Yeah, I think that that would be awesome because, and I could probably rant about this, but I'm so sick of the, oh, the Bruins are only playing Montreal three or four times this year. It's like, what happened to playing them six times a year? Like, I want to go back to that. So I feel like something like that would be awesome because then it's like giving kind of a rivalry back. And it's just hard to build that when you're playing, Montreal and Toronto four times a year as opposed to six. So
Why do I have to watch the Bruins play the Ducks twice a year? Why do I have to watch the Bruins go to LA twice a year? Like, I've said this a bunch, like, make that a big deal. Make that where, like, the Bruins go to Vegas once every couple years. You'd increase, Bruins fans would be like, all right, well, they go to Vegas in 2027. I'm booking my hotel now. Like, I'm planning on going to that. Whereas, like, they play them every year now in Vegas. I was like, all right, maybe next year. Maybe next year. And I just think, for the sake of rivalries, like, I'm all for as many games against the Canadians and the Maple Leafs and the Rangers as humanly possible.
Getting kind of back to the Four Nations, I don't know if we'll get super in depth with it, but just based on rosters that you've looked at, what you think might happen, who do you think wins? Who do you think is the best chance to win?
I don't think it's Sweden or Finland. I think they'll put up, very nice fights and, maybe something happens. I think we end up getting the US and Canada, which is what people want. And I think it's a big year for the US.
Yeah,
I
I think
do.
so too.
I think that roster is good. You got both the Kachucks. You've got speed, you've got skill, so you do have toughness, which, you do need in these things. You have a great decor. Like, again, like Fox, McAvoy, Slavin, Faber, Hanifin, Werenski. Like, you've got real guy, all different guys back there. And then in net, I assume they're going with Hellebuck, but you've got three legit options back there. So for me, like, I do think it's the US's time. And I do wonder, like, if the US wins this, there's already questions about the future of hockey in Canada. And not as many kids signing up. Does that become a bigger thing now? Does that become a bigger push by Hockey Canada of getting more kids involved? And now you have the CHL ruling, which I'm all into. And what does that do for hockey in Canada? What does that do for hockey in America? So I wonder, what are the big takeaways that come out of this? I remember in 2010 when the US almost beat Canada. It was like, okay, all right, but Canada still reigns supreme. What happens after this? So I'm curious to see the aftershocks of development of hockey in Canada and the US after this Four Nations thing. I think that's going to be the bigger implication.
I do think that Team USA, I mean, for me, looking at the goaltending, I think they have a decided advantage in that spot over all the teams. So I feel like defense and goaltending kind of gives them an edge. I'm curious about guys that you might be like paying attention to. Just wondering if maybe you pick one guy from each team that like you're most excited to see how they do.
It's an interesting question. I mean, I think with the US, I don't know if there's one guy is tough, but I don't know if it's, I think what I am curious about is all these guys are playing together, and you have guys who are on worse teams. So, like, an interesting one with the US, Brady Tkachuk is always in trade rumors. The captain of the Ottawa Senators just signed a big deal there. But you always have him linked to the Rangers, or you have, Felger want, dying to get him on the Bruins. What kind of recruiting happens at this? What kind of cross-pollination do you get where, just saying, McAvoy's talking to Brady Tkachuk and he's like, man, we could really use you. Like, and you're playing in Boston. You're playing in Boston. Especially those last couple games. So I just wonder about that. In terms of, like, individual players, I don't have individual players off the top of my head. I'm just really excited to see these guys go best on best. They're, younger guys like Bedard, younger up and coming stars you don't see as much of in this. There's like an Adrian Kempe for the Kings boost for Team Sweden. I also wonder, like, Elias Lindholm's playing with Team Sweden. Does that give him a boost for the second half? Does he have a really good tournament? And suddenly it's like, all right, he's cooking. So that would be my, like, one guy. I'm curious what Lindholm can do with Sweden just for his own NHL career.
I think I'm curious to see Matt Boldy for Team USA. Really liked his game watching him from afar with the Wild.
Millis.
Obviously, there is a roster full of very talented guys on that team, so it's like, where does he really fit in on the roster exactly? But I'm excited to see what he can do. But it's like you can have a team where you can roll out like Jack Eichel and Austin Matthews, and Jack Hughes is your like top three center. So it's like that will be kind of wild to see all that talent and where guys play.
That's the most fun is like I was saying this to someone earlier today. Like you look at it and it's like, oh, what are we gonna go back to NHL games and be like, oh man, I gotta watch like real third and fourth liners. Like, are you kidding me? Like, I wanna watch the best on best. So it'll give people a great look. Like it'll be a real I think it'll be fun. It'll be a good tournament. I wonder if it's as good or better than the World Cup of Hockey a couple years ago. But which now is I think 9 years ago, which is freaking insane. I was in high school when that. I was a senior. It feels like it was yesterday, and it was 9 years ago. But yeah, it'll be an interesting tournament. I'm curious to see, and I'm curious to see how the league expands it in future years.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, it'll be great around here. The a couple games that'll be at the Garden, and then the championship will be at the Garden. So that will obviously be really exciting. Evan, great to have you on the program as always. Always great to talk hockey with you. I wish the Bruins were doing better, but it's always great to have you.
Thanks for having me, Garrett. I appreciate coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, where can the folks find your stuff?
Bruins Beat is out twice a week. You can go subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. Obviously, Bruins Ringside on YouTube. And then New England Hockey Journal, subscribe. We have a lot of coverage. Prep hockey season is well on, well towards the playoffs. MIAA hockey is almost at the playoffs. We're doing big stuff. I just had the cover of our magazine, which I have right here. Open Borders. It's about the CHL ruling and how it's going to fundamentally, completely change hockey in New England. And
Very cool.
even at ages 14, I think it's going to completely change the landscape. So we get into that.
Cool.
And yeah, that's what I'm doing right now.
Fantastic. All right. We'll talk to you folks soon.